Hey, this is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
And we believe in magic, and that's why we believe in Sci-Fi Scarborough. Isn't that right, Steve Dickinson?
That is quite correct, sir. That is quite correct.
It's tremendous. Just looking at the photographs of our joyous time that we had on location for this year's Sci-Fi Scarborough, and Ben Lewis, already you've said your flatmate is from Scarborough, and you will now never hear the end of this.
You never hear the end of Scarborough with, with people from there.
Would you like to name check your flatmate?
Tommy Cooper. Ironically, Tommy Cooper, I know.
You heard it here first, Steve Dickinson. There we are. Ben Lewis has a flatmate whose name is Tommy Cooper, and he's from Scarborough.
Just like that.
That doesn't surprise me.
Just like that.
Scarborough. Anything's possible in Scarborough.
And as you prove with Sci-Fi Scarborough, again, heard from Larry Nemechek, who's now become a regular again on the Midweek Drive every couple of weeks. He joins us from stateside to talk about a whole variety of other bits and pieces. And you've got a fabulous event. I mean, John Campling, of course, was recently on tour, in fact helped launch the Lincoln New Theatre, Claudia Christian, a whole heap of other sort of fine folk who are actually there. How are you going to top it this year, next year, Steve? I mean, that's the key thing. What's going to happen with Sci-Fi Scarborough? The fifth year, I believe. Fourth year. May the fourth be with you,
yeah.
Obviously.
It is. It will be, yeah. There is an element of Star Wars there, and there's an element of Doctor Who. We've Over the 3 years that we've done Sci-Fi Scarborough, we realised that, you know, people really want Doctor Who. The Doctor Whovians are crazy. They're everywhere. And they're sending messages at all sorts of times of day and night, asking for various doctors that you couldn't possibly get because they're either too expensive or they're dead.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I want William Hartnell. We can't do science. Exactly.
I could try the re-skeleton or something, you know, but so it's just like, so we do our best. And this year we haven't finished yet either, but we're still putting together the lineup. But we're calling it Sat Who Day instead of Saturday. We're especially going to rename the entire day throughout the world. Sylvester McCoy is going to be with us, along with his amazing ace assistant, Sophie Aldred.
Exactly.
And so that's a proper dynamic duo. It's great to have a doctor and his assistant there. You know, it just rings a lot of bells. For the fans and definitely for the Whovians, they've been going nuts over it over the past couple of weeks because we've only just announced them over the past 2 weeks. Mm. And Facebook just went crazy and Twitter went crazy. And then we've added Gareth David Lloyd from Torchwood, who played the Yanto. Because even though it didn't run for that long, really, Torchwood, it's still a massively popular show. Getting a lot of work on Big Finish.
John Barrowman still actually wants to bring it back and continues to work on that basis, so who knows?
I was reading about this yesterday. You know, he goes on about it all the time, and John's a very powerful guy. You know, he knows a lot of people. If anyone can make it happen, he could. I mean, I'd love to see it back, because I thought it was great. It's obviously just Doctor Who for adults. I mean, he can't get much better than that, you know. So that's shaping up really well, working on another guest for the Tattoo Day to add to the Doctor Who thing. I've spoke to so many agents and guests, you wouldn't believe. I couldn't go through them all. We don't have enough time. There's not the fair time, but you could do some names. Being bandied around that were ridiculous at various times, but hey-ho.
There was one moment, and we obviously can't mention any names here, and I won't, but I think it astounded me where you said that somebody actually was requesting a fee of £5,000 because they'd once actually been the Foley artist and had provided the breath on a Star Wars movie or something.
Oh yeah, yeah. You get this all the time. You get some people. You know, most guests are really reasonable and really easy to deal with. They're fantastic. Their agents are a different kettle of fish. You know, they're like, you know, living leeches. You know, they're sort of bipedal leeches.
Right,
I call
he's
them.
Right.
They are. Honestly, they will.
I've had my fair share of it as well. I can believe you when you say that.
Yeah, they're only a step below lawyers, you know, solicitors, as far as I'm concerned.
If you happen to be a leech or a lawyer, please don't take the views of some of our contributors seriously. You know,
it's just a sweeping generalisation. Yeah. It's nothing else but that. It's just, you know, but then you get some guests that really, you know, they take themselves far too seriously, you know, and then think this little thing they did was just, it's worth this, and it's not, because you've got other guests that are willing to just, they will literally turn up if you pay their expenses, and it's like, and they're fantastic guests. You know, they engage people, they treat people, all the people at the event fantastically, and they look after the organisers as much as we look after them, because we need them to be happy and we need them to play till the line over the weekend and not create creating problems. Steve, because it shouldn't
Steve,
be there.
So. At the end of the day, we don't want to have another Destination Star Trek on our hands. Sorry, Dan. Don't get me started, please. Oh, Lord.
How did you go? I was there.
I endured the experience for, I think I managed to, about 3.5 to 4 hours on the Saturday, and dearie me.
All the money spent on tickets, because it wasn't that cheap to get in, really. And then I got my sister's tickets for her 50th, sent her with her friends for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I got there on the Sunday. After an hour, I walked around and went, is that it? You know, really? Yeah. This is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Where's the respect?
Teeny tiny merchandising area. The actual stuff. In fact, I would say compare our recent coverage of the exhibition in Blackpool, where I think they've got it absolutely spot on in terms of the Star Trek celebrations, etc.
Yeah,
the way the exhibition sort of worked on that system there, with what we were presented with in Birmingham, and I think you'll see a big difference there. That's all I was to say.
I'll check that out. I was really disappointed, but yeah. Onwards to better things.
But it's precisely because at the end of the day, you know, Sci-Fi Scarborough, we're singing your praises. We will continue to do that. As I say, I think it's exciting times on this system. It's going ahead in 2017. Ben, have you ever been to a science fiction convention at all?
I haven't, no.
I think we should actually, Steve, use this as a way of introducing the whole joy and wonderment to a science fiction event to a Brighton and Hove Albion resident and supporter.
Oh yes, definitely, definitely. One seaside town to another.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Exactly.
see what we did there. Exactly.
Was that a bleep?
It was. don't worry about the bleeps. It's just R2-D2 trying to get his message across. We're all fine. But yeah, as you said, the sort of Brighton to Scarborough. Have you ever been to Scarborough, Ben?
No, I haven't. But I keep getting convinced to go by a certain Mr.
Gonna
Cooper.
It's going to happen.
I know.
Clearly,
I'm not surprised. You must. It's so much fun.
No. Apparently, it's God's back garden. So who knows?
Yeah.
So what are the dates, Steve, in terms of where do we actually have to clear our diaries for the grand Sartu day? Are we a Sunday one as well? Anyway, the weekend next year. When
the Sunday, Star Wars Sunday, we're going to do. We're going down that line for the Sunday. You got Sartu day is the 8th of April, Saturday 8th of April, falls in the Easter holidays, and then Star Wars Sunday the 9th of April, we've got Gary Hagen joining us, who was Biggs in A New Hope, Luke's best friend. We met him at Star Wars Celebration in July. He's a great guy. He's a total legend. Tim Rose, who played Admiral Akbar in Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, and he's in Episode 8 as well. So he's just wrapped shooting that film with the rest of the crew. He's a great guy. And then we have another Star Wars guest booked, but we're not announcing him until for another couple of weeks.
Exactly. Listen, Steve, we've got to have some sort of context for, you know, for further sequels to this as we sort of head through 2016 and into 2017. Ben, any questions for Steve?
Yeah. Who's the biggest guest you've had or met yourself?
Oh, blimey. I mean, this is like, you know, at Sci-Fi Scarborough, this is, everyone's got a different perspective of who's the biggest guest. It depends who you like. But, I mean, in the second year, We had Dave Prowse there, you know, Darth Vader, and I know Dave doesn't do any conventions abroad anymore because of his health, but he's still Darth Vader, sat there in front of you, you know, and you're like sitting every picture, and he's like, put your arm on my shoulder, you know, like that, and we're like, this is Darth Vader, you know, we've all got pictures of him on our desktops, on our computers, and we're just still in awe, like 2 years later, you know, going, Dave Prowse, what a legend, you know, but I mean, God, I mean, the first year the Red Dwarf crew were there, and just having just watched the new series, you know, and he's just like, brilliant.
It's Craig
Charles. You know, they're still turning this stuff out.
Well, I can say that our mascot Spike is still thrilled by being the opportunity to have a photo shoot with yourself, Steve Dickinson. You know, I mean, this was the whole thing. You know, Spike and Steve, it's amazing. You know, he's just Steve Dickinson. You know, it's such excitement. The other great thing about this is, of course, it puts Scarborough on the map. I know it's already been on the map, etc., but it also is great for Scarborough tourism because it kind of opens up the town for, as I say, a fantastic time in April as well.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of people in this town put on events, arts events, etc., off-season, on-season. All they're doing is flagging up what the town's got, how beautiful it is, how talented, what a talent pool we've got to pull from, you know, to programme the event, because that's where a lot of the programming comes from, local talent pool. It's a pretty amazing town full of wonderful people. So more and more people are getting to know about this. You know, Starburst gave us that review. They've given us a review 2 years running, but this year it was 2 pages and it was like stunning. I mean, I was like, I didn't pay them a penny. People were going, how much did
Steve,
you give them for that review?
Steve, the fact of the matter is, Ed Fortune, one of our regular contributors, was singing your praises, and quite right. In fact, it was Ed who persuaded me that actually we should be making our way to Scarborough. And just looking at the backdrop, it's like a spaceship that's landed just on the seafront. I mean, Ben, you've got to say, location-wise, pretty effective.
I think it looks really good.
Bar. Yeah,
I think it's amazing.
It's perfect. There's nowhere like it in the country. I don't know about the rest of the world, because I've really checked it, but obviously venue-wise, you get a lot in seaside towns, hosting comic cons, etc., and conventions. Not one of them looks like a crashed galaxy-class spaceship like the Spa does. It looks like it's been pile-driven into the side of that hill and onto the beach, and it looks great, you know. We'd love to make a meme out of it where we actually do some graphics and get it to rise up, you know, and fly off, but we've been working on that with some computer programs and stuff, but it doesn't look good enough yet, so we're not going to use it.
I think the variety of guests as well certainly makes it unique, I think, as well. You know, it's not just one, it's not themed around one centred film. It's a case of,
you've got your Doctor Who's, you've got your Star Wars, you've got your great comic artists, you've got your graphic narratives, you've got a range of other sort of factors there, and you've even got a whole range of cosplayers as well that are connected. So it's just and Daleks, of course. I mean,
of course, full size ones as well,
full size real ones, as many as possible. R2 builders, you know, I mean, the props are as important to us. Everything's really important within the detail of the event. And the props now in Hangar 18, what we do in the Ocean Room, the other big hall there, last April, we had it absolutely nailed. We thought that was great with the Dread display, the Doctor Who display. You know, we had the body painters in there. We had the Anderson stuff back in with some new stuff added, you know. And that, for me, you know, it's like another convention within Sci-Fi Scarborough. You know, people walk in and go, what the hell? You know, they just don't expect it, you know, and that's what we want to do. We're trying to give people something unexpected every year, you know, something unconventional, you know. We try and pull out all the stops, you know. We never stop working on it. It's so much fun,
and
you know.
And that is why, in the not too distant future, it will be Sir Steve Dickinson, I'm sure. Premise will there.
Oh, I'm glad my wife didn't hear that.
It's important. Steve, it's been awesome touching base with a good self. I feel we've just whetted the appetite for Sci-Fi Scarborough. And as
I will have more news.
I think what we might do is we might try and arrange a little trip up for some Midweek Drivettes to Scarborough, because I know this time around, apart from Ed Fortune, of course, who is an honorary Midweek Drivette from Starburst magazine and so on, and myself, we were the only folk who were actually there for the event and covered sort of part of that. But I think we shall come up beforehand, maybe even, you know, early January, just to sort of see how you're doing and all the rest of its pieces, and sort of set the scene there, if that's okay, Steve.
Sure, yeah, we could go down there, have a chat. You know, we're doing a launch night, you know, in 2 weeks' time on the 16th. We're actually having an event launch night down at Farrington, and we're doing like a quiz. Wow. And we've got Ubisoft coming down, demoing some games, having some running some game competitions. We've got a whole new load of Predator props to show people, and we're going to make an announcement there. We're going to announce this guests.
We will look to follow that and cover that as well. How did the fantasy event go, by the way? Because in the end, we didn't manage to get together. We sort of lose touch with that whole thing. Was it successful?
Oh, fantasy con. Yes. Yeah, that was good, actually. They were a real nice bunch of guys. I really like what they do. You know, they do, it's like an author writing-driven event, and it's set over two hotels, and they have some really interesting people there, and they move it around the country every year.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know, it's never set in one place. I kind of like that element to it, you know, but it's like, I could never do one anywhere else but the Spa at the moment.
It is sensational. It is Sci-Fi Scarborough. Website, just use the search engine to go to Sci-Fi Scarborough. Marvellous things are going to be happening from that point of view. We will keep you appraised of that as well. I like to feel in many ways, Steve, we can be a semi-official coverage station for the event. We're happy on Siren and Southside to promote the best from that perspective. And
oh, absolutely.
We work at that. I'd say a round of applause for Steve Dickinson, please. Well, at least two folk in the studio. Astoundingly, Hannah Brown, who is the secretary of the Harry Potter Society and amazing Star Wars geek as well. Maybe she's still sort of geeked out after last night when she spoke to Peter Beale, the original Star Wars producer.
Oh, wow.
She's still asleep. Yes, she's just working through
that. Should get him there. Should get him on the...
Peter was connected with us at the Starburst International Film Festival in the year, but we'll work our through that. Steve, we've got two final questions to put to you. As ever, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
As fantastic as ever.
And are you ready to actually join us again in the very near future?
Yes, I will. Anytime.
listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Yay! William, how was Boston? Was the tea okay? Have you sorted out the challenges? And have you seen any evidence of election fraud?
Well, I went to Boston, and then because Trump and Clinton were down in Miami,
yes,
or rather Florida, Miami is where Obama is at the moment, I nipped down to the Sunshine State, and I got completely rained on in Miami, rainy and windy. And I'm trying to think. I think I drank any tea.
Oh?
No hint of the tea party.
No.
It's tragic.
Well, you know, I thought we could actually sort of redress the balance and actually have you as our vanguard in the notion of actually taking back the colonies and
taking back.
Yeah, offering an alternative to building a wall. How big your wedding, senor?
Don't you think that, given the fact that we've all been subjected to constant scrutiny and coverage of the U.S. election, that we should all get a vote? I think that the UK should. I think Florida should give up one of its 29 colleges and give the United Kingdom the 29th one.
Huh? I think that's a campaign.
I mean, you know, whoever's the president of the United States, they're going to have a certain impact on our future. Mm. God help us.
Exactly.
So I think we should be able to elect them or elect none of them.
Oh. Ben, would you agree with that?
Yes, 100%. Actually. To be honest, we're stuck either way, and I feel like we're not just us. I think the whole world's stuck.
Spoken as a man from Brighton would speak.
Indeed.
Of course, Ben Lewis, I think, is already heading up the Brighton branch of what I'm now referring to as the Sitwellettes, basically. the fans of William Sitwell, of which there are a growing number, you know, week in, week out, we're finding, you know, the perception of William's biting talk is you know, vital. So I think that Sitwellette is a way forward, really. Ben, have you got any pertinent questions to ask William today?
Yeah, well, what things did you get up to in Florida, as such? Did you eat many different American cuisine type foods?
What a wonderfully phrased question.
It was a very made up question. I didn't come prepared, you see. So
the articulacy of the band is astounding. Anyway, William.
Well, the first thing I'd say is I'm not sure about Sitwellette. I once went to an Indian restaurant where they offered me a moist towelette, which is two of the most revolting words in the English language.
Lord.
So the Sitwellette is a bit like a moist
Sitwellians.
Sitwell. Sitwellian is an established name. That's fine.
Yeah.
As to your second question, actually, the most interesting meal I had in Miami was at a Spanish restaurant called, I think it's XIXON, I don't know how you say that, Shisha or something like that. I don't know how you say it. It was pouring down with rain. I'd been interviewing candidates to staff up a food magazine, and the rain had lashed the side of this building, and the wind was rattling the window panes and so on. And I was standing outside trying to avoid being splashed by a SUV driving through a puddle and spewing its contents over me. And I spotted this little place called Chichon, the Spanish restaurant. I walked in there. I was greeted in Spanish. There wasn't much English spoken there. Not much English spoken in there. Looked round, there was this amazing scene. It was quite unusual for America. Not the fact that it was convivial, but the fact that everyone was drinking. Because in the United States, people don't drink at lunchtime unless they're English. Or, if you go to somewhere like Miami, there is that European flavour because you've got a lot of Spanish speakers, be they from Cuba or Venezuela or wherever. They have a different sort of approach on life. So people were getting stuck into red wine. It looked like a Sunday afternoon, but it was a Thursday afternoon. It was a Thursday lunchtime. So we got stuck in as well. It meant that the interviews in the afternoon were a little bit slurry, but anyway.
Oh, as long as they didn't get to the stage where you start saying, I've always loved you, ever since I first ever met you, I've always...
Speak for yourself, Alex.
This week's hashtag biting talk is with the Instagram sensation Clark and Wellboy, Financial Times critic Nicholas Lander, and others.
Many others. It was a packed show. There's a very important campaign that Clark and Wellboy, who is a mysterious... Well, he's not mysterious when you meet him, but anyway, who doesn't give his name. He is a famous Instagrammer. He Instagrams
everything he eats and has gained a huge following. He won a big award from the OFM, the Observer Food Monthly magazine, the other day. He's been lauded by people like Jamie Oliver. But what he is doing, along with the editor of Suitcase magazine, which does sound like kind of nutcase mag, but anyway, they are cooking for Syria, hashtag cook for Syria. They're getting famous chefs such as Angela Hartnett, all sorts of restaurateurs, to cook Syrian food in their restaurants for the public, to draw attention to this horrific humanitarian crisis that's unfolding on our doorstep, raising money for families, refugees, homeless. So hashtag cook for Syria, very important. Clark and my boy is spearheading it, so he came on my show to talk about it. And then I had all sorts of other guests. Nicholas Lander has a new book out called On the Menu, which is his casting his eye over sort of 50 years and beyond, actually much earlier than that, menus and how important menus are in restaurants. But what's interesting, I also had another guest on called Henry Jeffries, who's written a book called Empire of Booze, which is a history of Britain through the bottom of our glasses. Mm. Glasses, you know, not spectacles, beer, wine, etc. And both those characters have got their books together through Unbound, which is a crowdfunding website, and they say that that's the way forward. If you want to have a greater share of royalties, if you want to get better sales, it's interesting that people even as high profile as Nicholas Lander, who's been writing the Financial Times for 27 years, his wife is the famous wine writer, wine expert, master of wine, Jancis Robinson, people like him are crowdfunding their books. It's quite interesting. So for the joy of digital.
Well, we are digitally, delightfully native in so many ways. It's extraordinary. William,
you sound like you just described yourself being naked or something.
No.
I'm digitally naked. I'm exposing myself to the people of Lincoln.
Well, it's a possibility, but not today, I have to point out. William, we need to ask you, we've been putting this question to a couple of our contributors this morning, the Bangladesh collapse, I'm talking about the English cricket team, any thoughts, or is it just a case of, well, situation will remain in that state for quite some time?
I think they ate too much dal. Wow. And I think if you're not ready for that, it's match fixing, really. Because I think they probably collapsed because they had too much heavy ghee in their stomachs, and they should have sucked up the cucumber sandwiches at lunchtime.
These are classic lines. You know, again, we thought ultimately it would be William Sitwell who would actually put his finger on the pulse with respect to that. Ben was concerned.
Put finger on those who have pulses.
Yep. Was important. Ben was concerned you would be cycling today. Are you cycling, William, or are you walking?
I'm standing outside my home in Northamptonshire. Oh. I'm pacing as I speak to you.
We are there. Very nice. Very crazy.
So, is there a day at John Brown Media today?
I'm not discussing my workload.
Quite good response. Yeah,
I'm working from home, but I'm broadcasting to the world from the centre of the world.
Exactly. That's the key point. So, William,
I tell you, my great grandfather, who is an amazing writer, eccentric, and designer of gardens, said that the beech tree at the back of Weston Hall marks the centre of England. And actually, if you put a cross between sort of London and Leeds and so on, or actually it's not far off, more like Daventry, we reckon that Weston. So I'm now standing in the centre of England. The beech tree blew down, we put something else in its place, but I'm slap bang in the middle. I couldn't be further from the sea, tragically, but we're happy.
Well, on a programme which has taken us from Scarborough to Brighton and indirectly to Blackpool as well, what more could we actually do to end up, as I say, in the centre of England? And we're still going to be speaking to choreographer from Sadler's Wells, Jasmine Verdimon. William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Very much so. Glad you've been to Scarborough. Of course, a lot of my family were born there. Wonderful part of the world, so I'm happy to... For the conversation to now come via Weston.
Exactly. The message is there. Good. The Sitwellian theme will continue ever onwards. And I see the werewolves are out as well. It's fantastic. And obviously, more alertness in a dog there than there was in Frodo in Gibraltar this morning.
Yes.
Well, come here. Exactly. Is it the ghost of Barbara Woodhouse that's coming across here? That one? Sit.
It's my man Dave's dog, Grizzle.
Well,
Grizzle, that's an interesting name.
Well done, Grizzle, having a cameo performance that's actually gone in there. And in fact, I realise I've been remiss because I haven't actually played the special ident that Greg Wallace produced for us when we met up with Greg at Countryside Live. So we'll have to save that for another time.
No. If you want me back, I need to hear it now.
I want to hear it as well. I'm with you on this.
It's not quite in the system as yet, gentlemen. Okay.
Well, load it up. We're going to keep on talking.
It will come through, honestly. It will come through in the full. Just will time travel. William, will you return?
Well, only if you play this jingle now. You're never hearing from me again.
Oh, dear.
No more food.
It's not a sputtery biscuit-based one, is it?
There would have to be a huge gap as I actually physically had to leave the studio, find the actual system there, work through a whole range of things. There's a tranche of material.
This is one for next week, William, I think. One for next week.
It would be
claiming you're digitally native, and you, in fact, are digitally naked.
This is so true. Yeah, exactly. Mea culpa. Yeah, clearly, this is the whole thing. The moral of the story is, never actually tease ahead unless you can back up your tease. Oh well. William hopefully will return to hear his jingle and ident next time.
I do hope so, as myself.
Keep it very quiet now. Magnetically clever ingenuity, a visual delight, wildly inventive choreography, the physical imagery is boundless and truly mesmerizing. Just some of the critical compliments that have been passed along in terms of classic bouquets to the Jasmine Vardaman's company's latest incarnation with respect to the joys of Pinocchio. And if we're really lucky, we'll be able to speak to the legend that is Jasmine Vardaman at present. Jasmine, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, thank you very much, I'm well.
Delighted to feature your good self this morning. The Jasmine Vardaman Company, of course, founded in London in 1997, rapidly rose to become a significant element within the British dance theatre scene, dedicated to the choreography of artistic director. Your good self, of course, Jasmine Vardaman, associate artist of Sadler's Wells since 2006, and now Pinocchio. It's just one sensational thing after another.
Yes, it's been a good ride.
So this wonderful activity of the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, which will be featuring Pinocchio in a matter of weeks from now. Of course, you've been on tour doing a whole range of things. The Adventures of Pinocchio. You've gone back to the original Italian novel, of course, of 1883. So it's not going to be the sanitised Disney version of the story, is it?
No, it's not. Yeah, it's true. The work is an adaptation of the original book written by Carlo Collodi, as you said, in Italy in 1883. And it's very much follow the original structure of the story, which is 36 episodes, which was written at a time when Italian society was philosophically and morally engaged in a question about the nature of education. They ask if could peasant be educated, if their children can go to school and become real boys, or are they destined to be merely a workforce, donkeys? So it's very much questioning, or allow us really to explore our assumption of what it means to be human, discovering his journey to become a real boy.
Yeah. So I presume no Jiminy Cricket will be appearing in the actual sort of piece.
No Jiminy. Yeah. But the cricket in the original book, the cricket unfortunately been killed by Pinocchio in the third chapter. So it's not happening in the performance, but there is a kind of the voice of the conscious that is there.
As you say, it explores the themes of what it is to be human, explores innocence and morality, peer pressure and temptation, crime and retribution. What you've got in Pinocchio is basically a prescription for life, one would have thought.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting journey, because I feel, through my interpretation, I feel like Pinocchio discovers human emotion, what it means to understand them in himself and in others. And through the story there, he meets different emotions and discover them. And I find that the human body has this fantastic capacity to tell stories, and especially if you use the entire capacity physically, vocally, emotionally, and intellectually to convey the story. So I try to reimagine and to find different way to reimagine and to retell the story to the audience through those.
Now, it's fair to say, our co-presenter today, Ben Lewis, I'm not sure, Ben, whether you're a particular fan of avant-garde dance and ballet and such like, but this particular world premiere of Pinocchio coming to the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, just generally a sensation. I mean, I'm very interested in the whole thing. Your thoughts?
I mean, I've never seen a ballet myself in person, but I think it'd certainly be quite, it's an interesting perspective to look at. I think as well, being on the doorstep of the university, I think it's a great opportunity to be able to go and view it. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I think myself, I'd have to turn up with a few other people who might be interested to enjoy it more.
Now, the first public performance, of course, launched Kent's International Family Festival, Boing, on the 27th mm-hmm. of August. You've been on a national tour at present. You've been up in Newcastle with Dance City. How's it been going? Because you've had quite... I mean, from Canterbury, of course, Newcastle on Tyne, His Majesty's Theatre in Aberdeen, the Yeovil, Winchester Theatre Royal, Exeter, and so on. And, of course, London Sadler's Wells last week, the 24th, 25th of October, and Shrewsbury. How's the actual event been going from your own perspective, Jasmine?
It's been fantastic. The audience reaction is great. It's great to engage with young audience and adult at the same time, because the piece is designed also for 7+, but it's not necessarily kids' performance, but it's also via the context of the story, it's talked to children. It's 90 minutes long, so it's could be challenging for some audience, but they sitting glued to the stage throughout the performance, which is fantastic to see. And and as I hear, it's almost sold out, or perhaps sold out in Lincoln, so people will have to rush to see if there are much.
Exactly. No, very, very much. So, I mean, after Lincoln, that takes place on the 17th of November. You've got the 22nd of November, you're in Aberystwyth. 24th of November, Swansea. And then from the 14th to the 18th of December, you're in Ipswich for Dance East, as far as this year is concerned. Looking at some of the other events that you've been involved with, Jasmine, obviously Freedom, 7734, Theatrical Gold, piercingly powerful, according to the Daily Telegraph, Yesterday, Justicia, Park, Lullaby. How does Pinocchio sit with those, or is that a bit like asking an author to select their favourite book, really? Is it a different sort of approach that you've taken in terms of developing Pinocchio, or is it a case of you're still using the wonderful kinetic movement of dance to interpret the story?
Well, there is some similarity, of course, but there is one big difference that here I started with an existing story, which is on unique and complicated structure that had other challenges, such as deposed by the very famous Disney interpretation, which is more well-known than the original book. But I feel that's the main change. Most of it, I'm working in the same way to try to communicate and create a multi-layer product that communicate to the audience on different levels, emotionally, conceptually, visually, of course, and go through using text and kinetic scenery and animation, and there are quite, and obviously the physical movement that within the piece.
And again, it's continued to sort of just open up into a whole range of things. Ben, any questions or thoughts for yourself?
What, What do you feel? Well, what's the biggest date you'd be looking forward to in particular out of the list, if without being too favouritist as such?
Clearly, she mentioned Lincoln. Of the ones you've had so far, I mean, is Sadler's Wells still at your heart, really, from that particular perspective in terms of places to perform?
I mean, Sadler's Wells, obviously, it's associate artist there, been there for 10 years. We have a fantastic audience of followers, so it's always a big thing to perform in London. But we've been to most of the venues. We've been with all my previous work, so we have an audience of followers which growing, and it's fantastic to bring back and to see people coming back to see the work. And everywhere has these special moments.
And presumably different spaces can offer different sort of challenges and other sort of elements as well from that point of view. So it's great. So that. Have you been to Lincoln before, by the way, Jasmine?
Yes, with all of our productions.
Of course you have.
For many years now.
Well, it's been our loss that we haven't featured you on the programme much more frequently, so we need to put that right pretty forthwith. A reminder, of course, you might still be able to get one or two tickets available. That's 17th of November, Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, Pinocchio, and the sensational Jasmine Vardimon Company. Jasmine, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay for you?
Yes, absolutely.
This is very positive.
Great.
Good. So can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the very near future? And hopefully, as I say, maybe doing a little feature and coming down and seeing you in London and doing the feature on your excellent working company.
Absolutely. That would be fantastic.
Night.